Perek Zion opens up. Vayavoy Hamelech v'Homon Lishtois in Esther Hamalka. This is now the second mishte, the second feast that Esther is inviting Achashverosh and Haman to. Now the Gemara makes a diuk. He says that at this feast it says that they came to drink. The first one, it didn't mention that they drank. And that's because at the first feast, Esther was still fasting. Remember, that was the third day of the fast. Esther was still fasting. Therefore, it doesn't say anything about eating or drinking. This is the second feast, and at this point, Esther already broke her fast. And that's why it's talking about them eating and drinking. Pesuk Beis continues, Vayomer HaMelech LeEsther Gam BeYom HaSheni. In the second day, the king turns to Esther and tells her, what is your request, and it will be given to you? What are you asking for? So the commentators explain that the difference between your request and your what you're asking for is what you're asking for yourself personally, and is referring to what you're asking for others, for other people. And again, this is an open-ended opportunity that Achashverosh is giving to Esther. He's basically telling her anything you want, ad chatzi malchus, up until something that will divide my kingdom, which is the Beis Hamikdash. Now, this is a very big deal because in those days, the word of a king was very serious. It was unheard of that a king would take back his word. If he decreed something, that was it. It was finished. There was nothing you could possibly do to take that back. To the extent, the Gemara says that you're not allowed to destroy a shul before you rebuild the new one. The fear is that if you destroy the shul before you build the new one, you might not come to build the new one. And if you destroy the first one first, you'll remain with no shul at all. Therefore, you always must build the second shul, and only then are you allowed to destroy the first one. There's one exception. If a king decided, he gave his word that he would build a shul, he is allowed to destroy the first one before he begun to build a second one. And that's why Hordus HaMelech was able to destroy the Beis HaMikdash before he rebuilt the second Beis HaMikdash. And that was because the word of a king is so strong that a mountain will uproot before a king takes back his word. It's so strong, it's so powerful, we are sure and positive that the king will not return on his word, and therefore he's allowed to destroy the Beis HaMikdash before he rebuilt the second one. And so now, what Esther Amalek is asking him is a very big deal. She's going to ask him to take back his decree of killing the Jews, which is not so simple, because you already sent out a decree for all the Goyim, all the non-Jews, to kill all the Jews. Let's see what happens. Pasuk Gimel, V'tan Esther Amalek v'toymar. Esther turns to Achashverosh and tells him, Imotasi chen be'inecha, if I find favor in your eyes, Amelech, if it is good in front of the king, I'm asking for my people. Me and my nation were sold out . We were sold out to be killed and destroyed. If we were sold as slaves, I wouldn't say anything. Obviously, the person who is doing this, who decreed against my people, doesn't have the king's best interest at heart. If he really had the king's best interest, he would at least say, make them into slaves. Get some kind of manpower out of them. Why just kill them out? There's no use to the king in just killing them out. Now at this point, this is the first time when they're married that Achashverosh actually found out that Esther is Jewish. Not only is she Jewish, but she comes from royalty. She told Achashverosh that she is a direct descendant of Shaul HaMelech. And at this point, Ahasuerus, not only does he not upset at Esther, he's not killing her, but he's very, very happy. Because remember, those days, kings were very, very cautious about lineage. Lineage was extremely important to them. And when he found out that Esther does not come from dubious lineage, in fact, she relates all the way back to Sheol HaMelech, to King Saul, he's very happy and he's very excited. And remember, they're married now for 5 years. For these 5 years, he did not know where she comes from. And that's why he's extremely happy.
Especially for him, because he wasn't from a good lineage.
Right.
Himself.
Right. He used to be a stable boy.
Right.
But once he came to power, he was a king.
Now
right. It was important that his queen come, at least his queen will come from royalty. Pasuk K continues, Vayomer HaMelech HaChashverosh, HaMelech HaChashverosh says, Vayomer LeEsther HaMalka, and he says to Esther HaMalka, notice the double Lashon of Vayomer. It repeats Vayomer twice. Why is this? Because
he's talking to her.
Exactly. This is the first time in their marriage, they've been married for 5 years. This is the first time that Ahasuerus is talking to Esther directly. Until then, the king would not address Esther directly. In those days, a commoner was not able to speak directly to the king. There was a translator who would translate what the commoner would be telling to the king. Even though it was the same language, he would tell the king what the commoner is saying, and the king would speak back to the translator, and the translator would speak back to the commoner. In any public forum, Ahasuerus did not speak to Esther directly, even though she was his queen, and he loved her very much, as we've seen before, yet he did not talk to her directly. I don't know exactly how it was when they were intimate, it's not clear, but definitely in public, they were not speaking directly. This is the first time, that's what the double Lashon of Vayomer is referring to, this is the first time that he's speaking to her directly. What does Ahasuerus say? Mi uzeh ve'ezehu? Who is that one? Asher melo li v'las eskein? Who has the nerve to kill the nation of my beloved queen? It's a bit perplexing to see a surprise. He obviously knows about this plan. He was in it with Haman. And he knows exactly that they were planning and they sent out this decree to kill out the Jews. So it's a bit perplexing to see his surprise. Pasuk Vav continues, V'tomer Esther ish tsar v'oyev, this cruel and evil man, Haman harah zeh, this bad Haman v'Haman nivas m'lifnei ha-melech v'amalko. The Gemara tells us that Esther, in fact, was about to point to Ahasuerus himself. Who is that evil man who wants to kill my people? That is you, Ahasuerus. And she was about to point to Ahasuerus. A malach came and moved her hand to Haman. So the Mefarshim, the commentators, try to explain what is going on over here. If she, remember, she's using very, very particular peopling skills in order to get Ahasuerus to listen to her. She first comes over to him. She doesn't ask him at the first time. She prepares him for what she's about to request. She says, "Imal Malach Toiv, first come to my party. And at the party, I'm going to ask you a very important request." Because when a person is prepared mentally to answer a request, he's more likely to fulfill what the queen wants. That's why she didn't ask him right away. She was preparing him. And the way she's speaking to him, Imal HaMelech Toiv, if it's good in front of the for the king, if I find favor in his eyes, she's going on and on trying to please him and use peopling skills in order to get him to oblige to her request. And now she's going ahead and accusing him of killing the Jews. What's going on over here? There are many, many explanations given. The Gra explains, again, it's a bit hard to understand, but there's a very important lesson that we can take out of this. That when tzaddikim, when really righteous people speak to kings, they actually think of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. They think of Hashem, they think of God. And therefore, Esther kind of lost herself as she was talking to Ahasuerus. She kind of forgot that she was talking to the king, because she was thinking of Hashem. She was thinking of God, and therefore since she was speaking the truth, she knew that Ahasuerus was part of the plan, and therefore she was about to point to Ahasuerus. It's just a very important lesson that we can take from that. When we speak to an important person, we kind of forget about about Hashem, because we're so enamored by the importance of this person. But either if it's a wealthy man, politician, whoever it is, we kind of forget about Hashem. And these people, these tzaddikim, are exactly the opposite. When they speak to the king, they forget about the king because they're so involved in talking to Hashem. That's the explanation that the Gra gives. Now, Haman, it says, Haman nivas milifnei melech v'amalk. Haman knew that it's over, finished. Right now, at this point, once the queen accuses him of killing out her nation, there's nothing he can do. Now, part of the nace was that it worked out in a way where both Ahasuerus and Esther were both present when she was accusing Haman. Why is that? Because if, in fact, it was only Esther, and the king was not present at the time, then Haman can tell Esther, listen, I didn't know that you were Jewish. I would have, I have nothing against the Jews. If I knew you were Jewish, I would never send out this decree. And now I have nothing against the Jews. But now that Ahasuerus is present, he knows exactly that how much Haman hates the Jews. So he can't say that in front of Ahasuerus. Now, if Ahasuerus was only present and Esther was not present, he was telling Ahasuerus, listen, I had no idea that your queen is Jewish, right? He has excuses if one of them is not present. Now that they're both present, Haman has nothing to say. And that was part of the nace to completely stump him, and we're going to see right now how he's completely embarrassed and humiliated and out of sorts, and that leads to the outcome of his death, as we're going to see. Pasuk Zayin, V'amelech kam b'chamosai, the king gets up in his fury, mimishte ayayin, from this party, al ginas abitan, he goes out to his royal garden, v'homon omad levakish al nafshay me'ester amalka, Haman is now begging for his life from Esther HaMalka, kiro ki chosei el v'ro me'es ha-melech. He realized right now that the king is on his bad side. Pasuk Ches continues, V'melech shav m'ginas abitan. The king is now returning from his royal garden. The Gemara tells us, why does it have to say that he returned from the garden? If he went out to the garden, obviously he's returning from there. Where else is he coming from? The Gemara says that this was a very, very unique garden that Ahasuerus had. There were particularly very unique and ornate trees that were growing there. They were very interesting size. They were miniature trees and very, very particular, beautiful plants that were growing in this garden. This was a garden that only Ahasuerus himself was allowed into. Throughout history, many kings had a special place where only they were allowed to go. In fact, if you remember, once Prince Charles was going into his personal area, and Princess Diana wanted to come in with him, and he told her, listen, you can't come in, this is my space. And she got very upset, and she was not happy about that, so the papers in London went on and on about how Princess Diana was so upset at Prince Charles. In any case, that was the way it was in those days. The king had a very special place where he can go and relax, just have some private time. Now, Ahasuerus walks into his royal garden, a beautiful place, and he sees these people uprooting his garden, destroying everything. In fact, these were malachim that were sent by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When Ahasuerus turns to these people and he says, what are you guys doing? Why are you destroying my garden? They turn to Ahasuerus and say, what do you mean? Haman told us to do this. Why are you asking? And now, if Ahasuerus was mad before, he's now returning into the room even more infuriated than when he left. That's why it says that he's now returning when he's upset. That's why he repeats that he's returning from this garden. So Pasuk says, V'homon shav minginas abitan al beis hamishta yayin. He's returning back into the party. V'homon noifel, Haman is falling onto the bed. Asher Esther Aleh, on the bed that Esther is lying on. Vayomer HaMelech. So first of all, it says, Haman Neufel Alamito. Haman is falling on the bed. What does it mean, Haman is falling on the bed? It's used in present tense. Why is it, what does it say in that way? So the Gemara explains that what was going on was Haman was now begging Esther, please, I had no idea that you were Jewish. Please forgive me. I'll do anything to please you, to make this better. Please tell the king not to kill me. Because Haman knew that that's it. It's over. There's nothing he can do. So he's asking Esther for forgiveness. He knows it's only up to her that can save him. Those days, the way it was just like we lean on Pesach when we drink the wine, they would lean on these beds, on these couches, and Esther was leaning, she was lying down on this couch, and a malach came and pushed Haman onto Esther. He tries to get up, the malach pushes him back down, up and down, up and down, up and down. Now remember, Haman is an atheist. He doesn't believe in God, he doesn't want to recognize that there are angels. So when Ahasuerus walks in and he sees Haman going up and down on Esther, he's furious. Not only did you try to kill the people of Esther, my beloved queen, you are also ordering to destroy my garden, and now you're trying to rape the queen with me in the house. How dare you have the audacity to do this? That's why it says Haman Neufel, Haman is falling. As Ahasuerus is walking in, he sees Haman falling on the bed with Esther lying on there. Now, up until this point, Ahasuerus thought that Haman and Esther were having an affair and trying to kill him. Now he realizes that Haman, not only is he not having an affair, but he's trying to kill the queen, and he's also trying to kill him, as we're going to see in a minute. So Ahasuerus is completely infuriated. So Pasuk Ches continues, Vayomer HaMelech. The Melech says, Hagam lichbosh samalki imi bavois. You're trying to take over my queen with me in the house. Hadavar yotza mipi HaMelech. The words came out from Ahasuerus upnei Haman chafu. And the face of Haman turns white because now he knows that there's nothing he could possibly do. Even turning to Esther has failed him and he is for sure going to die. Pasuk Tes continues, Vayomer Harvoina, Echad min ha-sarisim lifnei ha-melech, Gam hine ha-eitz asher asa Haman le-Mordechai. This is the tree that Haman prepared for Mordechai, asher dibar toy ve'al ha-melech, oimin ve'vei Haman, gavoya 50 amah, is standing in the house of Haman, 50 amas, 50 cubits tall, Vayomer ha-melech tluhu alav. Now Harvoina is a very interesting character. It's not clear, the Mepharshim disagree, if he was actually on Haman's team, and now that he realized what a bad situation Haman is in, he now turned against him, and he's now on the Jewish side. There are those who say that it was actually Eliyahu Navi who was placed right there at the right point, at the right time, to say the right words and tell Ahasuerus that not only is Haman planning to kill the Jews, but he's planning to kill Ahasuerus' only friend, who actually saved his life, Mordechai. And now Haman is trying to kill him. So it'll be clear to Ahasuerus that Haman is working against him. So there are some freshmen that learn he was now turning on Haman, trying to point out to Ahasuerus that Haman is actually an evil man. But there's another pshat that I saw that Ahasuerus actually misunderstood Harvoina. Harvoina was telling Ahasuerus, this is the tree that Haman prepared for Mordechai, who spoke good upon the king. Asher dibra toiv al melech. But Ahasuerus did not understand that. Ahasuerus understood that what Harvoina was saying was, this is the tree that Haman prepared and said that this will be good for the king. Not the good that Haman was talking, that Mordechai was talking to the king. Not that good that Mordechai was trying to save Ahasuerus' life. Rather, the good part was that Haman was referring to, that Haman was referring to, that this tree is good for the king. This will be a good tree to hang the king on. That's what Ahasuerus understood. And now, in his mind, the picture was complete. He knew Haman is out to kill him, out to kill his queen, out to kill Mordechai, his friend who's trying to save his life. And at this point, Ahasuerus is ordering for Haman to be killed. Now, from the Megillah, it's not clear, but the Targum Sheni tells us that Ahasuerus actually ordered Mordechai to be the one to carry out this decree and kill Haman. And this is another beautiful part of the Megillah. Targum Sheni tells us exactly what happened. Haman, at this point, he knows that he's dead. It's over. It's game over. There's nothing he could possibly do to save his life. And yet, he still gets down on his hands and knees and begs Mordechai. And the Targum Sheni tells us exactly what Haman was saying. Bevakosha mimcha Mordechai atzadik. I'm begging from you, righteous Mordechai. Please, do not kill me the way they kill lowly people. I used to be an important man. Entire nations would be shaking from every word that I would say. Wherever I walked, people would bow down to me. Please do not kill me in a lowly manner. Kill me in an honorable manner. Don't kill me like they killed Agag, my great-great-grandfather, was killed by Shaul. Please kill me in an honorable way and chop off my head, rather than hanging me, which is a very humiliating way to go, apparently, in those days. Now, it's so interesting to note that Haman is dead no matter what. It doesn't make a difference if he's killed by hanging, if they chop off his head. The outcome is the same. You're dead, you're dead, you're dead. But still, Haman is begging Mordechai. Remember, this is his arch enemy. He's willing to give up everything before he gives Mordechai the honor. But he's still begging him, please, do not kill me in a lowly manner. It just shows us how low a person can sink. When a person is into covet, he's into honor, he's so haughty and so full of himself, he would do anything, even though it might be his last words, he would do anything to try and gain some kind of last honor before he dies. The Megillah is actually filled with these descriptions of how infuriated Ahasuerus was when he heard about Vashti refusing to come. How full of anger Haman was when he saw Mordechai refusing to bow down to him. How mad Ahasuerus was when he came back from his royal garden. He talks about how full of anger they are, infuriated, filled with rage. What does that tell us? These people, Haman and Ahasuerus, we would have thought, have a very comfortable life. But because they were so into gaiva, they were so haughty, so full of themselves, so self-centered, that led them to be so into covet, into honor. And that, because they were so into honor, every tiny little thing that someone did against them completely threw them off. Because what do you mean? You're disturbing my honor, my covet. It's so significant. Any tiny little thing is a shot in the heart. And that's why their life is so miserable. Every tiny little thing is destructive to their covet. When a person is not so haughty, not so full of himself, okay, so you insulted me, big deal, you know, it's not the end of the world. But because they were so into it, their quality of life was destroyed completely, as we see. Even though they had a beautiful, comfortable life, plenty of wealth, honor, and power, they still lived a very miserable, unsatisfying life. Pasuk Yod continues, Vayislis Haman Aleitz Asher Echin L'Mordechai V'Chamas HaMelech Shachacha. Now they hang Haman on the tree, and the anger of the king cools down. The commentators explain that this is the first time they use such a word, of Shachacha, of forgotten. The anger of the king is settling down. It says a double chaf, two chafs. This is the first time it's telling us that. It says it in this way. Why is that? Because this is actually referring back to the anger that Ahasuerus felt when Vashti refused to come to his party. That anger was still there the whole time. Remember, this is 5 years ago. Actually, more like 6 years ago. And at this point, It was only now when the anger of Ahasuerus is completely forgotten from that incident. That whole time was there, maybe a low-grade anger, but it was still there on the back burner. Ahasuerus did not forget it. This is the first time that he actually calmed down from his original anger with Vashti. That's what it's referring to. Now, it's important to note how rapid and quickly the turnover of events was. Remember, this happened all in a matter of 12 hours. After the first party, Ahasuerus was still planning to kill the Jews. The Jews were still fasting. It was that night that Ahasuerus could not sleep. He wakes up with this nightmare that Haman is about to kill him and is having an affair with Esther. And then, the next morning, he orders Haman to give honor to Mordechai, march him down the streets of Shushan. And only at the second party is when Esther is begging Ahasuerus to not kill the Jews. So this is all a matter of 12 hours. That turnover was so rapid and so quick, no one could have anticipated the way it had happened. That is the whole theme of Purim, that everything is turned over and nothing is the way it's going to see. Now we're gonna see later on, next week, hopefully, Parak Ches, exactly what happened. Now remember, at this point, Ahasuerus did not yet annul his decree to kill the Jews. All he did was say that Esther is now to be saved, Haman is to be killed, the house of Haman is to be given to Mordechai. Mordechai now took over the position of Haman. The power of signature is given over to Mordechai, that special ring that he gave over to Haman, he's now giving over to Mordechai. But his decree against the Jews is still there. Remember, it's not simple at all for a king to turn back on his word. He sent out that decree, everybody already knows about it, it's considered to be a very dishonoring thing for the king to turn back on his word. We're going to see next week in Pasuk Ches, Perek Ches, exactly how Esther deals with that. We're going to stop here. All right.